It's the Face of Community and Business podcast, introducing you to the stories behind the faces, focused on fixing today's problems with thoughtful leadership and purposeful living. Sit down with us as we get to know the individuals who make our community second to none.
How you guys doing? I'm Tony Arce. Welcome to the Face of Community and Business podcast. Today I'm joined by my good friend and new podcast host and member, Alex Fillon. Alex, thank you for being here, brother.
Appreciate it. Honored to be here. Thank you.
No, it's what an amazing ride it's been so far. And just to see the kind of guy you are and your ambitions, right, your values all come together. And to be at this point is really exciting. I feel like I can say I was there, not at the beginning, but at the beginning before things really blew up for you. So
yeah, I appreciate it.
Honored to have you here and a part of all this.
Thank you.
So picking up where we left off, you know, a lot of discussion around just the way that you got into the industry, right? Having been now in the mortgage industry for right around a decade, right?
Almost.
Yeah. So much that you've learned, but also a coach, right? And a family man. And, you know, there's so many elements to you, right? But picking up where we left off from our last conversation, right? A loan officer or a mortgage lender, I should say,
yeah.
But also a coach in that industry, right? How has this opportunity or how has this journey been so far in terms of really just putting a spotlight on your goals, ambitions, and bringing that awareness to the path that you're taking, navigating all these roles that you're in?
Yeah, it's interesting you mention that because ever since, I would say, high school, college days, I've always mentored somebody growing up and always wanted to give back and, you know, never thought myself as a coach until I stopped playing college football and then coached 1 year. A lot of people don't know that is my high school head football coach went to our rivals for reasons that don't need to be known and whatnot. But they reached out to me and said, hey, we'd be honored if you coached. I said, I'm honored that you asked. I'll definitely join.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I coached 1 year at Niles North. This was 2008, and I enjoyed it. I saw myself in those high school kids, 16, 17, 18-year-olds. A lot of them were struggling with some of the things I was struggling with in high school, whether it's grades, girls, keeping up, having friends, getting in fights, whatever it is. And I was just there as a mentor, and I could just tell the way they looked up to me. It just fulfilled something inside. And I always told myself that I would be honored to be a coach in one way or another. I don't think I had it to go up the ladder of an NFL coach or anything like that, but always wanted to coach. So it's definitely come around since I joined Amir and Justin in the mortgage journey 8.5 years ago, and they started their coaching company about 2 years ago, that it's really come around full circle where I was the student. I was being coached by Amir. I was shadowing Justin and what they were doing. And Amir said, dude, just check your ego at the door and do as I say. And I did because he had a huge heart. And he came at me hard. And I was used to that in our previous conversation. Mm-hmm. Would say when that coach yells at you, it means they love you. And not saying Amir yelled at me or anything like that, but it was tough love. Hey, dude, I told you to do this. What's going on? Why isn't it done? And it was more direct conversations, which I'm all about with friends. So now for it to come full circle and was asked to be the first coach in the growth-only coaching company was just a true honor. I was blessed to be asked that. And now being able to give back just is a big fulfillment for me because not only am I able to help other individuals, but also twofold is I'm able to help myself and learn from the students. And I tell them that all the time. I said, listen, we're equals. Just because I'm a coach doesn't mean I'm better than you. I'm still in the journey of learning, right? And the beauty of it is I'm coaching students from all over the country. So as I'm coaching them of what's going on in California, what's going on in Florida, what's going on in Maine, what's going on in Minnesota, Tennessee, Kentucky, right? These are different markets that I deal with and they deal with, and I'm able to learn so much from them as they're able to learn from me as well. So it's been a great journey. And the crazy part, it's just the beginning.
It is. And it's like watching you go through these leadership courses, if you will, of life, yeah. Right? Where it started for you in sports and hearing from Walter, you know, Mendenhall,
yep.
Just that journey of how you go from also inspiring others, right, to then being a coach, but then it translates into a different type of coach.
Absolutely.
When you think about developing those leadership qualities, right, what comes to mind in terms of those really important things that, especially as advice to those emerging leaders that you just need to have, right, that you need to focus on first before you start going out and coaching others or leading others in that way?
Yeah, I think first and foremost is you have to be true to yourself, right? One thing I learned a long time ago playing college football from our head coach was look in the mirror. I take that seriously. The amount of conversations I have with myself in the mirror could be a little scary. I'm very tough on myself. Sometimes I swear, Alex, get it together, burst out a yell, whatever it is. I'm a little different. I do have a switch in my head where I could turn it on and off from those playing days. First and foremost, you have to be honest and true to yourself. Second, I think you really have to lead by example. That's what a true leader is. I learned that in a very young age, is I could tell the fraud leaders from the true leaders. What are you doing every day? Are you the first one in the gym? Are you the first one in the office? Are you the last one to leave? Are you there to participate? Are you there to share? What are you doing that I'm going to see as a student and you being a coach that's going to make me want to follow you? And what I learned a long time ago too is the number one way to connect with somebody is through vulnerabilities. So I'm very open and straightforward with a lot of individuals and relationships. Some work out to be great friends, some, you know, kind of fizzle away. But for me, I'm very honest, I'm very open, I'm very vulnerable about the pros and cons of my life, my weaknesses, my strengths, and then I see how they react to that. And then it opens up them a little bit more. And now they're like, oh, I didn't know that about you. I didn't know that about you. Like a quick little story is when I played college football at Illinois State, you look at me, I'm a typical white guy, right? Let's call it what it is. Judge a book by its cover all day, no problem. But I'd be in the locker room and some of the African-American teammates I had would be making jokes, right? And they'd be making white jokes. And it was cool in the locker room. There was no issue whatsoever. Everybody was cool. But I'm looking at them like, dude, I'm white. I'm right here. And they look at me like, dude, you ain't white. You from Latvia. Shut the hell up. And I'm like, okay, you're not wrong. So it was just cool to go through that experience of being in that locker room, dealing with people. And then is when you're open and vulnerable with individuals, you just are able to build a better relationship that could take to the next level. And you don't have to walk on tiptoes or wonder, do they have an angle? What's going on? It's genuine. And that's what I was taught a long time ago by many individuals in my life, whether it's family, coaches, sports, and friends nowadays that I've learned so much through.
Yeah, no. And you have a way with people. You can see that. And it's easy to understand why you've been successful. Not easy, right? Because it's not an easy path.
No.
It never is. And anything we're doing is never going to be easy. But those leadership qualities, they come naturally to you as much as it comes easy to connect with others, right?
Yeah.
How do you also balance all that, given the fact that you're also a family man? These things are important to you, right? But being ambitious, how do you navigate that?
That's a great question. It's definitely not easy. It's tough. And I think it's my upbringing, right? Being from a different country, a lot of people don't know, but our bathroom was a hole in the floor.
Wow.
One and two. We had no heat. So we lived a little bit differently. So sometimes when people complain to me about certain things, especially here in America, I take it a little bit differently. I don't say it out loud. I think differently. For me, is I always have a chip on my shoulder. I always am thinking of it could be worse. I'm very fortunate. One of my biggest concerns and challenges is raising my daughter not to be a prissy little white girl. Let's call it what it is. That's one of my, it's not so much a concern, but more of a challenge because my wife and I are in control of that and we're able to mold her. But I remind her often when she complains or anything, and she's just 6 years old, like, we didn't have this growing up. You're lucky, you're fortunate, you have your own room. I didn't have my own room growing up, right? My wife didn't have her own growing up. And it's not to talk down to her or make her feel a certain way. It's just more the appreciation, right? And if we're not there to mold her, it's very difficult to see that. So it's definitely difficult to balance. But at the same time, I think my upbringing and my culture and who my parents are have raised me a certain way where I want that pressure.
Yeah.
And that's something about me is I perform very well under pressure because it's my back's all against the wall, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I love the movie 300.
Yeah.
Or the saying or the phrase is burn your ships,
yeah.
Right? Because there's only one way out.
Yeah.
And that's that athlete mentality. That's that immigrant mentality that I carry with me in anything and everything that I do.
And it's interesting because we were talking, you have a brother who's turning 18, right? A big difference in age there.
Big time.
And he's getting a full ride scholarship to play tennis at Ohio State.
Yeah.
And it's something that you can even see the differences in your personalities today, right?
Big time.
Given that same family, right?
Yeah.
And yet here you are, very different personas or even just mindsets that you're having to coach him on a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think that is, given the fact that it's almost like its own science experiment, right?
Yeah, big time. Big time. I mean, we grew up differently, right? You take me, where my parents were 19 and 23 when they had me in a foreign country. And it was very common and typical to have kids that early in Soviet Union at the time, Latvia now. And, you know, a quick little funny story is I'm playing football at Illinois State. I'm an only child and I'm getting ready to graduate. This had to be October 2005. And they come to one of my games and I'm expecting for them to tell me, what am I getting for graduation? And I'm not thinking like a car or anything like that. Like, we don't come from money here. We're middle class. And then my dad's a smart ass. And he's, hey, son, remember how you always wanted a brother? I'm like, what the hell are you talking about, Dad? Well, I got you one. I'm like, what? I'm like, what do you mean you got me one? You bought one at a store? Like, what do you mean you got me one? Like, my mind didn't go there. One, that your parents still do that. And then two, bro, what are you talking about? I'm 21 at the time.
Wow.
And 22 and a half when they gave birth. But he's like, yeah, I got you a brother. And I'm just like, you got to be kidding me. And at first, it was weird. It was awkward, right? I'm in college. And then when he was born, it was amazing. It was truly amazing. And we have a great relationship. And then for him, my parents were 42 and 46.
Right.
Which is very common in America. Like, I'm 40. My wife's 41. We're still trying to have our second kid.
Right. Which is crazy.
Which I could relate to my parents of being that age and everything like that.
And isn't it funny how you don't think of yourself as old at all?
At all.
You feel younger now than you did then.
What's crazy even is I'm closer in age to my mother. Right, just under 20 years old than to my brother of 22 and a half. So my mom and I have a great relationship. You know, I feel like we're more friends, which a lot of great parents would say, hey, be a parent until you're 18. Once your kid turns 18, be a friend to them. And I feel like my mom and I have always been friends and been very close, because when she's 30, I'm 10. When she's 35, I'm 15. When she's 40, I'm 20. And now I'm 40, she's 60. I feel like we're closer than ever.
So you were an only child.
I was an only child, and I have only child tendencies. Yeah. I'm not going to lie about that. My wife reminds me of that often. She's one of three, and I was the only one. And I still consider myself an only child just because I grew up.
No. What are some of those only child tendencies?
It's not a fun word to say, but selfish, right?
Yeah.
And I toy the line of being selfish, meaning that I'm selfish with myself of being able to take care of myself, of being there mindfully. I always tell my wife is I have to be there 100% in order to be there for my family. So what does that mean? Eating healthy, waking up on time or early, going to the gym and working out is I have to take care of myself to be the best man I could put forward. And then sometimes I think I do a good job of being there for others and thinking about others, but sometimes I just think about myself and I don't think about others at times, but I feel that I've gotten a lot better with that.
And what changes did you notice becoming a brother? Like, because it almost seems like it might make more sense that having a brother and all of a sudden you go into this kind of leader role that, I mean, you had it all there because obviously the high school stories, you know, Walter, all that.
Yeah.
But how much of that then put you on that path towards being more intentional about that leadership?
I think it became more intentional when my brother started playing tennis. A quick funny little story is, you know, when we grew up in Latvia, the former Soviet Union, is I was playing tennis. I was in private lessons. And according to my parents, I was really good. And what parents don't say, their kids are really good at something. So when we came here to America in the early 90s, we didn't have enough money to send me to private lessons in tennis. It's an expensive sport. So what's funny about it is when my parents had Nikita, my brother, my parents were better off. They were well off compared to when we came here. And that made it easier for my dad's, holy cow, this is a second chance for me to put my son through tennis. They put a racket in his hand right away. So to answer your question directly, I think it's more when my brother started playing tennis and started getting in his early teens of playing tournaments and everything like that, where I became a true big brother, a coach, a mentor, more on the mental side of things, right? Like, I know tennis, but I don't know tennis. And the conversations we have now, it's did you win, did you lose? It was more, did you win, did you learn? If you lost, what happened? If you could go back, what would you do differently? What is one takeaway you could take from that match that you lost that you could learn and make sure it doesn't happen again?
Yeah.
Like when I played football, the coaches would say, the eye in the sky don't lie. What does that mean? We're being videotaped in everything that we do.
Yeah.
And then we'd watch that film. And then the coaches would pause, rewind, yell at us, make fun of us, yell at us more. And we learned from that. Because as an athlete, you want to make others happy. You want to make your coach happy. You want to succeed, right? So for me, it was almost like I want to succeed, but I also want to do so I don't get yelled at in the film study.
And that brings up an interesting point, because I think you can see almost the contrast between being too soft, right? Yeah. And the consequences of that, right? Mm-hmm. Which aren't good. But then also being too tough, where even you're saying you're hard on yourself, right?
Yeah.
And how much of that can be of a detriment versus an actual help?
Yep.
Like, how do you also as a coach balance that between, you know, understanding when it's the right time and not, and just feeling that sense of you're beating yourself up? And is that even productive at that point?
Yeah. When you coach somebody, number one is you have to understand that person, yeah. Right? I think Stacey King says it well, announcement for the Bulls is know your personnel. Right? Can you give somebody a bounce pass? Can you give somebody a chest pass? What can you say? Right? For me, somebody could yell at me and I'm not listening to their yelling. I'm listening to the words that come in. For my brother, you can't yell at him. Right? And that doesn't mean he's soft or anything like that. He's just different. He's more positive reinforcement. And it's no different. I take those experiences that I had on myself from coaches. I take the experience that I have with mentoring my brother, and then I use that to coaching now. Right? Like one of the, we call it a battle plan call. And our first call, it's a 30-minute Zoom. We get to know each other. How much production did you do last year? What are your goals this year? And one of the main questions on a scale of 1 to 10, how accountable do you want me to hold you? Before you answer that question, 10 is if you don't do something, I'm calling your wife and telling her what you didn't do. And then I'm going to fine your credit card for not doing it. So are you sure before you tell me a 10, you want to be held accountable to a 10? Because we don't play here.
And where do most people fall?
8 or 9.
Yeah.
8 or 9.
That's
some are 10.
Though.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They haven't been coached before.
And where do you think that sense of urgency or motivation comes from for a lot of people? What are they driven by? When you talked about it before, like for you, money isn't about having it. It's about the freedom that comes from
100%.
Knowing what it's like not to have it.
Yeah.
Right?
100%.
For those that are, you know, 9-10s even,
yeah.
Right, what's motivating them to do that? And is it always the most healthy reason?
Everybody's different.
Yeah.
Everybody's different. My coaching style is I'll never talk down to somebody or yell at somebody. I don't want to degrade them. Right? But at the same time, I'm going to be tough on them. One of the things I learned a long time ago from my mentor, Mir Sayed, is in order to take water out of the well, you have to put water in the well. And that's in any relationship, whether it's a friendship, whether it's a marriage, regardless what it is. But specifically from a coach to student is, one, I have to talk the talk, walk the walk, lead by example, but also know that I care about them. And if I care about them and I have a big heart, I could go at them and call them out and say, bro, what's going on? You mentioned you were going to do this. You didn't do it. What happened? Okay, that's not going to happen again. And let's make an agreement on what's going to be the punishment or the fine or whatever it is.
And I think we can all really relate to one another in that we want certain things, and yet the simplicity of it doesn't mean easy.
No.
Like, it's
no.
A simple plan,
yeah.
But sticking to it, sometimes it isn't. Would you see that there's almost like a root cause of why we as people just don't do the things we know we're supposed to do? What's that hold up? What's that thing that you as a coach or just someone that cares, right, that's seeing, what's that thing that we're all just avoiding or don't realize how much it's impacting us in a way where we are shooting ourselves in the foot on a daily basis?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. I think it's laziness and I think it's accountability. A lot of people want accountability, but at the same time, a lot of people are scared of the accountability, right? It's that inner voice, exactly what's going on with you. But you're scared to talk about it to somebody else. And that's what I think our coaching program does an amazing job, is it gets that out of them. Hmm. It's, what's your fear? That's a question we ask in the battle plan call. What is your fear? What are some of the challenges? And before you answer that, the more vulnerable you are with me, the better I could coach you and the better loan officer you could become. So please think before you answer that question. right? And that's when I get their vulnerability. And talking to them like this in a calm voice and not attacking them and going at them or anything like that. It's like, why are you paying all this money? Because the coaching program ain't cheap, right? Why are you investing in yourself? Kudos to you, by the way. Great job, because a lot of people don't. But why are you investing in yourself? What do you want out of this? What are the pains you're dealing with? What's the struggles you're dealing with? What are your goals? My job is to understand all that and create a pathway for you to get there. And that's the beauty of it.
No, and I think having a coach, I mean, look at every athlete, everybody, no matter who it is, right? The great ones. I saw an interview with Mike Tyson when talking about his trainer, just that relationship. And what if it weren't that way? And he said, what do you mean it was that way? I can't separate my success, my story, my anything. And I think that's so true for a lot of us, right? That if we had someone who could hold us accountable and have those things, success is there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What, in terms of, I guess, the aspect of coaching, for those who have never had one and really wouldn't even know where to start, but what's some actionable steps that people can take to get on the right path towards, one, identifying what those goals are clearly and then putting themselves on it before even getting to a coach?
Yeah, I think it's number one is writing down your goals, right? I forgot what the statistics are, but if you write down your goals, there's a certain percentage you're going to achieve them more than if you don't. And I think just try it out on your own. Write down those goals and write an action plan to get there. And if you feel like you're struggling, you need a coach. 9 out of 10 people need a coach. It's very difficult to be self-disciplined. I consider myself self-disciplined. A lot of people say how impressed they are with my self-discipline of waking up early, working out, not eating certain things, right? I learned a long time ago, the best word, the strongest word in the dictionary is the shortest one. And that word is no, right? I learned a long time ago is when you say yes, you're indirectly saying no to something else. So I think twice before I say yes to something else, and I'm very adamant about saying no and protecting my own time. I truly think everybody needs a coach, but especially if you've been lying to yourself, those inner voices, I want to work out, I want to stop drinking, I want to stop smoking, I want to be a better father, I want to be a better brother, whatever it is, and you're not achieving it, you need to go find help. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? Like my wife got me into therapy and I was against it for the longest time because of my culture. It opened up my eyes. And I went from once a week, every other week, to once a month now, to now the therapist saying, hey, Alex, if you don't want to, you don't need to come here. You're good. And I said, wow. No, we need to meet once a month because I'm not perfect. There's things I do. I've learned. I'm very coachable. And that's how I went from once a week, twice a week, or once every other week to once a month because I'm very open and vulnerable of, hey, I just yelled at my daughter and I feel so uncomfortable that I can't even sit with myself. I'm disgusted with myself. And in my culture, you get yelled at, but this is my daughter. I'm a big, intimidating dude. I can't yell at a six-year-old. I did that once. It's never again. Now, don't get me wrong. I raise my voice. I raise my tone. There's tones with that, right? But I went to the therapist directly and said, I yelled at my daughter. How do I not do that again? She gave me actionable steps, right? So I think it's really understanding yourself and being vulnerable with yourself and being honest with yourself of, hey, dude, you need help. And that's not a negative thing. I wanted help because I want to be a better father. I want to be the best father I could be to her, not to anyone else.
And that's a big part of your story, too, is that mental health aspect of it.
100%.
It's about being that best version of yourself, not just in the obvious ways of going to a therapist, right? Because that is, hey, I reacted this way, but wait, why am I doing that and having those healthy lifestyle, making those healthy lifestyle choices that you've made as well. And what's the goal with that? Or why has that been such an important part of it? Not just for yourself. That's the easy part to see, but to be that advocate for other men specifically, because it's very needed.
Yeah, I think there's a notion out there that men are tough. They're not supposed to talk about their feelings. They're macho this, macho that. I disagree 100%. Do I consider myself a macho guy? Yeah, 100% I do. But I'm also sensitive. I joke around with my wife. I'm like, I'm a Kiwi. I'm tough on the outside, soft on the inside. Like I could be vulnerable and I could open up to a lot of different things with you, especially being a girl dad. That's helped a lot with patience and just being open and honest and really listening to that. Life is tough. Life is hard. There's a lot of obstacles, right? Marriage is tough. Marriage is a lot of work, right? Especially if you want to keep it together, right? Divorce rate is around 50%. I don't think many marriages are all glitz and glamour and everything is great and everything is fun. You got to work at it. You got to go on date nights. You got to listen to your spouse, significant other, whatnot. So I think it's having those conversations amongst men too and amongst your friends. It's, bro, are you doing okay? How are you? And one thing with me is I could read people very well, right? I need about 5 minutes with somebody to tell if they're a good person or not. So that helps me understand is, hey, Tony, how you doing? I'm good. Tony, how you really doing? I'm all right. Tony, what's going on, man? How you doing? Man, I got this going on. I got this going on, right? It's just a lot of conversations are at surface, right? And that bothered me for so long of like, why am I having these surface conversations with my friends where we could be open and honest and vulnerable and we're here to help one another. And it's okay to say, I love you, man. There's nothing wrong with that. So to me, I think a lot more people are opening up with that. And also you see other people struggle. I would say our parents' generation, right? A lot of them are struggling where it's just like, you can't talk about your feelings. Why? Who said you can't talk about your feelings? Right. There's nothing wrong with talking about your feelings, right? I talk about my feelings with my daughter all the time. That's how I'm helping her. And I think the biggest thing too, to answer your question, is you have to lead by example. In order to talk about it, start the conversation, that's why I'm so vulnerable in so many things is, hey, I have a therapist. Hey, I have a marriage counselor. Hey, I yelled at my daughter once, whatever it is. Somebody might judge me and look at me. Cool. Or we could get closer and build a better relationship and you could really understand me where I'm coming from. And there's something I might do or say that could help you.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the biggest thing.
And on that, what advice would you give to those men out there who, that's the kind of friendships they have, right? You don't really talk about those things. You don't share those types of emotions or have those types of conversations. How do you even start? There's so much to unpack there, but what is the right approach to just even putting it out there?
Yeah, I don't think there is a right approach besides just starting the conversation, right? Say you and I are together. We have that. We never shared our feelings or anything. Say, hey, Tony, I want to get something off my chest. You mind lending me an ear? I just want to share something with you, right? Something that's going on with my mom, something that's going on with my wife, something that's going on with my daughter. See how they react. If they don't care, they're not a true friend. They should not be in your inner circle. Go find some new friends.
It's a good test too. It's
even big time.
Yeah.
Big time. I let go of a lot of friends in high school, you know, on my way to college, after college, because I was determined to be successful in college, you know, eventually be an NFL player, which fell short, which I'm perfectly fine with. And then after college, it's, don't get me wrong, I went out, I did my partying, but also when I stayed out till 2, 3 a.m., I'd be up at 6 a.m. the next morning.
Yeah.
I had a lot of friends that wouldn't, that show up late to work. I just don't hang around that. I still love them. I show them love. I dap them up when I see them, the whole nine. I don't talk poorly about them. It's just, I can't be around that.
Yeah.
Because now we're not on the same page. We're not talking the same language. We don't have the same ambition, the same goals or anything like that. And I need that around me because I'm not at 100 all the time. I'm at 100 majority of the time. But when I'm at 70, 80, or 90, I need my boys. I need my spouse. I need my other people in my circle to pick me up. And I've had that plenty of time, especially with COVID. And I think COVID, to answer your previous question, of men started talking about that a lot more because they were by themselves. They couldn't go to the gym like they used to. They couldn't go out like they used to. Now they're stuck with the problems at home.
That's a great point. Yeah, that's a great point.
You know?
So now looking forward to the future, a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
What are you most excited about and how can we support you and have people follow and uplift and all those good things that we need to do for one another.
Absolutely. I think of just, I enjoy connecting with great people, whether I truly enjoy helping individuals and I make my bread and butter from doing mortgages and helping individuals finance homes. And I do that from the bottom of my heart and I treat them like I'm treating my own mother or father or brother and help them buy a home and just being honest because reputation is everything. So if you're out there listening and you need help with a mortgage, I'd be honored to help you. Also, anybody that is a mortgage advisor, mortgage lender, loan officer, we have many different titles, and you're not in a coaching company, check out Growth Only. It's by far the best coaching program that's out there today. And that's not just my thoughts or the individuals running it. It's the students' thoughts. Like we're up to 600 students now in 2 years.
Wow.
And we call it the modern day loan officer, right? It's being the traditional loan officer of meeting people, seeing people, connecting with people, and then the modern day loan officer of being seen, being known, seen, and trusted, or being seen before you're known, like, and trusted, right? And that's with the social media out there. So it's a combination of both that no other coaching company has out there. And majority of the coaching companies that are out there, the coaches don't even produce anymore. And I just, to me, I don't want that type of coach. I want a coach that's in the trenches with me, that's dealing with real life problems every single day, real life loans. And then also anyone out there that wants to talk about mental health and do an event or anything like that, I'd always be honored to connect in that way.
And how can people find you on social media?
Absolutely. Just my first last name, Alex Fillin. I always joke around like fill in the blank, but one L. So Alex, F-I-L-I-N, Lens, L-E-N-D-S.
Beautiful. Well, brother, as always, a pleasure, an honor, a blessing to call you a friend. Thank you so much for being a part of this community, and I'm sure for the many people that you will inspire and help along our journey together. So thank you, brother.
Thank you so much, Tony. Appreciate you.